Blog Talk Radio.
And now it's time for the Stepping Into My Power Blog Talk Radio Show with Dr. Imani Ma'at. This show is dedicated to bringing important health and wellness information, products, and services to communities in the U.S. and globally. Dr. Ma'at is a health educator, author, speaker, and health coach who is committed to helping others to step into their power and open doors to health, wellness, and prosperity. With her expert guests, this show is fun, informative, and serves as an awakening to those that are ready to wake up. So what are you waiting for? Enjoy this show and please invite others that you care about to listen in. There's no time like the right time, and the right time is now. Stepping Into My Power, Blog Talk Radio, starts right now.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. But just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, girl. Just you and me. Wake up, all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long. Judgment Day, so won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up, all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. Let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it, girl. Just you and me.
Good evening. Good evening, everyone. This is Dr. Imani Ma'at, and you are tuned in for another episode of the Stepping Into My Power Blog Talk Radio Show. Thank you so much for joining us this evening. And, of course, I want to give a shout-out to my co-host, Mr. Brian Stevens. Brian, are
Hello,
you there?
Can you hear me?
Hey, how are you doing? I can hear you
right.
Loudly and clearly. You sound
That's
great.
Good.
So. We have a wonderful, wonderful show planned for this evening. And I'm going to get right into it because I don't want to waste another minute. I want to dedicate the whole hour to our guest speaking. He is smooth, he is charming, he is amazingly talented and professional and extremely handsome, but that's just me. Desmond Dez Thornton is a communications expert who helps thought leaders say the right words in the right way when they matter most. An idea enthusiast with a knack for transforming the complex into the simple, Dez has an uncanny ability to inspire action through story. Whether speaking to a group, looking into a camera, or connecting one-on-one, Dez is completely convinced that the cornerstones of communication are confidence, clarity, and connection. When perfectly blended, these qualities epitomize the polished presenter, one who turns presentations into illustrative conversations. Dez was professionally trained at the University of South Carolina and Dale Carnegie. He was the 2014 president of the Georgia chapter of the National Speakers Association. In 2014, he was a speech coach for TEDx Peachtree. Dez was also the 2014 winner of Speak Tank, a speaking competition hosted by the National Speakers Association. Boy, 2014 was an amazing year for him. At the tender age of 9, Dez forgot his lines in a church play, but he never forgot the embarrassment and humiliation that followed. To help you avoid the same fate, Dez's enduring objective is to transform communications from communicators from self-conscious to self-confident by adding structure and story to their presentations. And by virtue of being a member of the Georgia chapter of the National Speakers Association, I have had the distinguished honor of getting to know Dez Thornton. He has offered me his guidance and mentorship, and he is just a phenomenal, phenomenal, phenomenal person. And so people you are in for a treat this evening because you'll get to hear our conversation with Dez Thornton. So let me open up the line. Hello, Mr. Dez. How are you?
Good evening. I am doing extremely well. I'm excited to be with you today.
Good.
I have to start by congratulating you on your new book. I know I wasn't supposed to do that, but congratulations to you.
Oh, I accept the plug. Shameless plugs are wonderful. Thank you so, so much. I'm very excited about this book. So I've already spoken about it on the show and on Facebook and everywhere, but it's Healthy Haiku 3, How to Fight Childhood Obesity, One Poem at a Time. So thank you for that plug. Appreciate it. So you've been really busy, 2014 and 2015. I know there were a lot of meetings. I was looking for you at the NSA, and I'm like, where's Dez? So you've been in high demand, which is a good thing.
I don't know about high demand, but I'm working hard and trying to get there. I do, again, appreciate the opportunity to be here with you, such an accomplished advocate for the health issues of children and adults as well, and with the whole concept of stepping into your power. Of course, one of the things when you find your voice and you step into your power is you have to communicate that message to the world. And so hopefully today, through sharing some of my experiences, I'll be able to help some of your listeners who have found that power and now want to share their voice with the world.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. That was my thought exactly. I said so many people have so much important information to share and just sharing their hearts with young folks and with communities, whether it's about health and wellness or empowerment, and they just are not quite sure how to break into the speaking arena. So you are such a pro at it and so young. So I'm certainly inspired by what you do. So tell us a little bit about the work that you do. Who are the clients that you work with, and who are the ideal clients for you?
Sure. I actually work with C-suite executives, mid-level managers, and primarily any thought leaders who have to give high-stakes presentations. Many times people shy away from speaking publicly, but for those people who either have to do it as a part of their career or people who've had, you know, traumatic, life-changing experiences and want to share their message with the world, you know, I have finally found my gift, which is to help them say the right words in the right way when they matter most.
Wow. That is wonderful. So how did you first discover your passion for speaking and for coaching? And I know those are two, they're different, but they're connected the way you bring them together. So tell us a little bit about how you discovered your passion.
Sure. Actually, it was a challenge to recognize my gifts. I think like most successful people who I've talked to, when you do something naturally, I think we have a tendency to discredit it as a gift or a skill that we can be compensated for. So to be totally honest today, you know, it took me a long time to realize that speaking as well as coaching is something that I can do well. And it was a long, winding road for me. I fortunately always had the ability to connect with people because I grew up very humble. And so I'd always approach conversations and just any situation from a listener's perspective. And so that usually, you know, gains me the confidence of an individual. And as you alluded to earlier, once I joined the Speakers Association and some of the accomplished speakers in our organization began to ask for my help or advice or feedback, I think that sort of edified the gift and confirmed for me that maybe I do have something here. And like anything else, you know, I just began to pursue it more and more. And so eventually I arrived where I am today. By no means am I there yet, but, you know, I think I'll just keep striving in this direction because it seems to be working.
Well, you certainly made a lot of accomplishments, and I'm sure it wasn't easy, but like you said, you learn as you go, and with the great folks in the NSA and other people that you've come across, I guess that has helped to help you to perfect your craft. What would you say is the greatest experience you've ever had coaching?
Actually, the greatest experience I've ever had coaching took place last year at TEDx Peachtree. I was working with a speaker from NASA, and she was speaking at TEDx Peachtree on a project she was working on called Solarium, which was about the sun. Now, obviously, the technical elements were a little above my head, but the thing that made it special for me is this speaker was a little apprehensive about speaking in front of a large group. It wasn't something that she was used to doing. And so starting the process with her and, you know, being in the room with her that day that she delivered her big speech and watching her hit it out of the park and the sense of relief that she felt afterwards, you know, we just formed, I think, a lifelong bond from the emotional connection that we went through. And just to know that I played a small part in her success meant so much to me. In my work, I traditionally work with people who speak quite a bit and
Are you still there, Des?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, you went out for a second.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, you said you that's okay. You said you normally speak with people who speak often. That's
right.
The last thing
I heard. I'm sorry. And so to work with someone who was a novice and who doesn't do speaking all the time and to have success and to know that I contributed in a small part to that success was definitely a memorable experience for me.
That is wonderful. I think a lot of people, again, want to start speaking and they're just not quite sure what to do and how to jump out there. And one of the things that I like about the NSA is that people are so giving and so sharing in what they know and what they've learned over the years. What role has mentors played in your development?
Wow. Mentors have meant everything to me. As far as my career is concerned and just life in general, I sort of view my mentors as my eyes. You know, they're the people who can see what's ahead because, for the most part, they've been where I'm trying to go. And, you know, at a ground level, I think my mentors have saved me money. They've also saved me time, which, of course, is a resource that we can't get back. And when I think about my mentors, I also think that, you know, they helped me define my uniqueness. And the reason I say that is because, you know, they have a certain standard of excellence that, as a mentee, I would aspire to. At the same time, I realized how I wanted to be different from them. And so I think that balance of having a standard of excellence but also realizing that I didn't want to be a carbon copy of them sort of helped me find my way. And I'm forever indebted to my mentors, and I thank them every opportunity I get.
That's so powerful because I guess really good mentors help you to, as you indicated earlier, find your voice, you know, and not a replication of their voice. You know, it becomes your voice and what you have to share. What are some of the things that you speak about when you're speaking? I know that you coach people into speaking and help them with speaking, but are there particular topics that you speak about?
Yeah, I guess it's kind of weird. Yeah, I guess it's kind of weird to say that I speak about speaking. So most of my speeches.
I love that. That's great. Mm-hmm.
Most of them are about different aspects of speaking. The three areas that you mentioned in the introduction: the confidence of speaking, the clarity of speaking, and then ultimately making a connection. And you know, those are three areas of speaking again that I think are extremely critical, and they all stand on their own. And the confidence portion of it is something that's very unique to the individual. Interestingly, most of the clients that I work with, I ask them, you know, what was a traumatic speaking experience you had as a child? And I find out that a lot of them hold on to maybe raising their hand in class to ask a question and, you know, giving the wrong answer and being embarrassed, or like me, standing up in front of a church or a school and just forgetting what you're going to say and humiliating yourself. And it's amazing how many successful adults still hold on to those memories. Mm-hmm. And so that certainly helps as far as, you know, the confidence is concerned. So it's interesting work.
Right. Absolutely. And the clarity, how does one improve their clarity?
Now, clarity to me is everything. As far as the clarity is concerned, you know, if you aren't clear with your ideas, then you basically just have this loose string of ideas where at the end, the goal, of course, is to ask the audience to take an action. And usually, of course, that action is to benefit them in some way. And if so, people don't understand what it is you're talking about, then that's the fastest way to lose them in the process. And so my approach is, you know, both logical and emotional. And I think sequencing ideas, keeping things simple, is really the way to go, particularly today.
That makes sense, because it's very easy to go off on a tangent and go in different places, and then you get out there in space somewhere and you forget exactly where you are, and you have to kind of pull yourself back in. But damage may be done at that point. And I've been there and done that, been there. What about connecting with your audience? I know that that's a really big part of being an effective speaker. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, connecting, in my opinion, is everything. One of the things that many speakers overlook is the importance of making an emotional connection with the audience. And I'm of the belief that it is critical that you make the emotional connection before you even try to make an intellectual or a logical connection, because we're all human beings and we're all social creatures. And before you can get anyone to do anything, you have to make them feel good, or, you know, have the feeling that you want them to have in order to make the decision. And so I just believe that the connection precedes everything in terms of getting an audience to buy into the concept or the idea that you're sharing with them.
Mm-hmm. So give us some tips on connecting with the audience. When do you stare at one person? Do you stare and you pan the audience? Do you pace the floor? I mean, I know people do it all wrong. A lot of us do it all wrong. Give us two or three of your best tips for connecting with the audience.
Well, I would say the number one thing that you can do to connect with the audience is to be authentic. And, you know, when you take the platform and you're standing in front of a group, even if the people in the room have never seen you before, we sort of sense on an energy level whether or not a person is being true to themselves and how comfortable they are in a presentation. And generally, you know, I feel that, you know, your speech or presentation should be like you're having a conversation with a best friend. And so if it feels forced in any way, then we will get a vibe, the audience will get a vibe that it's not authentic, and so we won't buy into what you're saying. So that's, I would say, one way to connect. The second way, I would say, is to understand your audience before you speak and know what their pain point is, know what their challenges are. And when you can tell an audience, you know, right from the start that you understand where they're coming from and you're there to give them some information that's going to help make their life easier in some way, whether it's to save time or make more money, then I think it certainly increases the odds that you'll connect with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, absolutely, absolutely. Understanding their pain, that's a big one, you know, because we all have pain points.
Certainly.
Once you touch that, I guess, as a speaker, you're in. You're in like Flint. So that's a good thing. So let's see. Some other tips. A lot of people just have so much fear about speaking. I remember as a child, I mean, I would toss and turn at night if I had to present a book report or something in front of the class, and this was like all the way through high school. I would just get really, really nervous about that. And some adults have really important messages to share, but still are just so afraid of speaking in front of people. So what are some good tips to share with people about just losing the fear?
Sure. Well, I think the first thing is you have to understand the source of the fear. So like you just said in the point that I made earlier, you know, it traces all the way back to our earliest memories of childhood and book reports and things like that. So I think number one is you have to face those fears and understand where they come from. Secondly, I would say that when you have a message to share with the world, when you step into your power, it's important to understand that you have an obligation that is bigger than you to share with the world. And as I said earlier, whether that's to alleviate a pain point or to help them create wealth or to help them have more health, you have an obligation to do those things. So one of the simple ways to help as far as the fear is concerned, at least to keep it in perspective, is what I like to call the window and the mirror. So many people, when they stand on the platform and speak to an audience, they look out and they see this huge mirror. And in that mirror, they see every gesture that they make, every move that they make, and it makes them more self-conscious. And so my advice to my clients when they're on stage is not to see a mirror when you look out at the audience, but to see a window and look through that window to the audience and focus on the people that you're talking to and focus on their faces and think about the pain that they have and the short amount of time that you have with them and focus on making that connection and just sharing your message with them so that they walk away from that experience either enlightened or, you know, with more knowledge to make their lives, make their situations better.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Instead of looking at a mirror, which is kind of reflecting back at you, and you're being critical of yourself, you look out and you see the green pasture, the fields, and, you know, and the vastness, but not in a way that's judgmental of yourself. Is that it?
Correct. I mean, when you look through a window, then you see what's on the other side of it, and it's not about you. And I think that's the main point when it comes to fear. You know, most of our fear is rooted in self-consciousness. And so when you look out and you see a mirror, then you see everything that you're doing wrong, and you make the presentation all about you. when every presentation mm-hmm. is about the audience and the people who are there. And so if you look through the window instead of the mirror, you focus on the audience and you focus on their needs. And the more that you do that, the less fear you tend to have.
Okay. All right. That is really, really good advice. Thank you so much. I'm sure that one's gonna help me. And I speak all the time now, so I don't really have the fear element. But I think, and this is getting to the next question, it's not so much fear, but just wanting to make sure that I've prepared to the extent that I can. How important is structure and preparation for a talk?
Yeah, of course the structure is everything, and surprisingly, it's the one thing that most people overlook. A lot of presenters tend to just go right in with their information and start writing without first thinking about, you know, what is the pathway they want to build as far as, and how do they want to connect the different ideas that they have. So as I said mm-hmm. earlier, and just to share a little bit of my process and how I approach speaking, the first thing that I look to do is make that emotional connection. And so in my work, I have a list of emotional phrases that are alphabetized from A to Z. And when I'm working with the presenter, the one thing that we'll do starting off is to go through that list of emotional phrases to identify what emotions do you want to evoke from the audience. It's how do you want them to feel, you know, before you get mm-hmm. them to make this decision. And mm-hmm. what happens for me there sort of magically is once I can identify the emotional track or the emotional structure of the presentation, mm-hmm. then everything else sort of falls into place, because those, you know, the emotional part of it is what's most important. And I'm sure you probably heard this before, but it's just like building a house, you know, without a foundation, or building without a foundation. The structure mm-hmm. gives the speech that foundation to stand on, and it helps the audience sort of move through the experience, because at the end of the day, in terms of presenting, your goal is to give the audience both a visual and a verbal experience where you take them through a process from, you know, A to B or A to Z. And without structure, you know, it's going to be difficult for you to hold their attention.
Mhm. Mhm. Yeah, that is so important, and it really comes through when somebody is not prepared, you know, and they haven't put the kind of thought that you just expressed, you know, connecting with their hearts, you know, with the emotional phrases and kind of pulling them in so that you've got their full attention, you know, and they're just sort of waiting for you to give them an instruction or whatever, wherever it is you want to take them, you know, whether it's to buy a product or to join something or to do something, you know, some big program. It really makes a difference if you're connected like that and if you've put all of that together. It's a lot of work that goes into speaking. A lot of people think that, oh, yeah, I can talk. You know, I speak all the time.
Right.
I can do that. And then they fall on their faces terribly without having the kind of mentoring that you provide and that, you know, people can get from NSA. So I'm just so delighted to have connected with you and the organization, and it's definitely helped me to be more clear, more confident, and to connect with the audiences. Hmm?
Absolutely. I was just going to add to that, you know, you kind of hit on an interesting point, whereas most people think that they can just get up and start speaking, where I believe in terms of preparation, that 85%, you know, if we were to look at a speech being 100% from start to finish, I would say that 85% mm-hmm. of the presentation actually takes place before you even step onto the stage. And I would only credit the speech itself with 10%, and so that's a total of 95%. And then the last 5% is sort of review time to assess, you know, how you did and what things you could do better. But the preparation mm-hmm. is the key in terms of speaking. And one of the things that I look for when I'm deciding whether or not to work with a client is their willingness to commit to practice, because if they're not willing to practice, then I don't want to spend time with them because I know that I won't be able to help them. And again, that's something that many people overlook. But the most successful speakers that, you know, you see in a professional environment or in television or different places like that, or any profession or discipline, is because they put in the work beforehand. And when you see them on stage, or, you know, when they're doing whatever it is that they do, they do put in a ton of work, and speaking is no exception.
Absolutely, absolutely. And people think of acting. They think, oh, acting must be so simple, you know, but, you know, there may be like one line that has to be practiced over and over and over again just to get it right. So there probably a lot of parallels in, between speaking and acting, you know, and I guess speaking is part acting anyway, you know.
It is. And even one of the things, Amani, that I find interesting as well is even the best speakers, they have coaches. You know, they still have coaches to this day, because there's things that, you know, that you can't, little things that you won't see just because you're so close to it. And if you think about professional sports or dancers, or as you just mentioned, actors, you know, they all have coaches. And so, you know, it's important to practice and to have coaching and to have guidance, because, you know, it's one of those, one of the reasons that I love speaking so much is just, when you stand up to speak in front of an audience, you have to hit it out of the park every single time. And as soon as that presentation is over, you know, it's like back to the drawing board. You got to start all over again. And so I just love that process of preparing, you know, getting to deliver, assess, and then go back and try to do it again. And in the speaking business, there's a saying that there's always three speeches. There's the one that you prepare to give, there's the speech that you give, and then there's the speech that you wish you gave. And I think most of us who are committed to the speaking process or the speaking business, you know, we're all chasing that speech that we wish we gave. I think that's so elusive.
And I'm sure you had a number of speeches that were the ones that you wished you gave, and that's the one you gave. So, you know, you are our role model for how to get it right. Do you ever videotape and audio tape yourself in preparation?
Absolutely. I never speak. I videotape my clients when they are practicing. I videotape myself when I'm practicing, because we have a tendency, we as human beings have a tendency to give ourselves a little bit more credit than we deserve when it comes to practicing. But once you put that video camera on, as they say, the video camera doesn't lie. And so when I put the video camera on, it allows me to see different things. One of the things that I'll share with you, for example, just to give you a little insight into the process and practicing. So the different ways that we look at a video, being that you brought that up. So, for example, I will turn the sound off of the video and then play the video and fast forward. And what that does is, if you think about a cartoon or a movie or something that you see fast-forwarding, what it does for a speaker is it highlights your gestures. And so if you have any repetitive or distracting movements or anything like that, you know, those things will be highlighted. So say, for example, if you have a speaker who rocks from side to side, or they only gesture with one arm, then when it's fast forward, you know, you'll see yourself rocking back and forth really fast, or you'll see that one arm flailing up and down, and it looks ridiculous, but it's just a way to actually point out, you know, some of the things that you may want to correct or could be distracting from a gesture standpoint.
I like that. That seems to make a lot of sense. I made a little YouTube video the other day. And, you know, my intention was to just do it, you know, one time done. And I must have done like 18 takes at least.
I was
like, wait a minute, this is not going the way, you know. And I had to just keep doing it and doing it until I made sure the content had everything that I wanted. It was just a, you know, 2-minute clip. But even with that, you have to perfect it, and people can tell if you just wing it.
Absolutely. I was going to say, if you did it in one take, I was going to come sign up for your class, because I definitely could use it.
Nope, it was a humbling experience. Just me sitting there, you know, with the camera. I said, wow, this was not supposed to take 2 hours. I was going to do this in, you know, 10 minutes max, and it just did not work out like that. So it totally is so important that you prepare and that you practice and practice and practice. When I first started doing radio, my parents would always listen in, and even now they listen in a lot. But my mother would always say, you know, it was really good, but you said about 50 times. You need to stop saying when you speak. And I said, okay then. I will work on not saying and I have worked on it. And then I'll go back and listen to this interview and see how many times I said this evening. I hope I'm getting better at that. But you know, we need the feedback. We need to self-correct and auto-correct just to make sure that we're getting it right. I just said
Well, now you got me self-conscious. I'm thinking, how many times did I say and Mom, please take it easy on me.
I know. I don't think you said it. I think that was the first time I said it, and it's only because I was focusing on it. So I will not focus on the phrase which means nothing. It's just a placeholder. What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to ask you a question. Do you know why we say or why we have those fillers, or what we call in the speaking business verbal graffiti? Do you know why we have those things?
Verbal graffiti. Because we're trying to think about the next thing we want to say.
It is, and yeah. That's correct. And part of it, another part of it, is it's an indication to the person that we're talking to that we're not done expressing our thoughts. And so if you and I are having a conversation, and if you just pause and leave that blank space, then I'm going to think you're done, and then I'm going to start talking. But if you say while you're formulating that thought, that gives me a clue that you still have something to say. So still not an excuse, but just a reason why we do that.
That's a positive. That's the first time I've heard it with a positive spin on So and the same with so. I think a lot of people, I don't know where this has come from in English colloquialism, but so many people will start to describe something by saying, so, and I'm like, where did that come from? That's horrible. Everyone says
yes.
So when it, anyway, that's, you know, and hopefully people aren't doing that so much when they're speaking, but even on TV, you hear people being interviewed and they say, so, you know, back in 2013, I did blah, 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 blah. But they start with so, and I think we just need to take that out of, we need to cancel that out of the English vernacular.
Yeah, Amani, I also like to just share really quickly, I mean, so I do something that sort of flies in the face, I guess, of traditional speaking coaching, because I really don't count ums and things like that when people present. Unless it's distracting. You know, if a person says it too much, then obviously you want to get rid of that. But going back to what I said earlier in terms of being natural, I found that when I try to force a person out of their ums and things like that, a lot of times it gets them out of the rhythm in which they speak. And so they start to sound mechanical to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
And I think as long as it's not distracting, some people say never put your hand in your pocket when you're standing in front of an audience. But if it's a natural movement that's not distracting and it works for you, then I say go for it.
Okay, that makes sense. I like that. It helps
but I'm
people
not,
to stay.
Now, let me be clear. I'm not trying to overrule your mother, though. So you should not say
be clear there. Get it. I she's definitely one of my best English professors ever. And I learned to be pretty brutal when I was teaching at the graduate level and grading papers. But anyway, some of that. But it is important, I think, to speak clearly and to not do too many of the fillers to the extent possible. You know, but it's like you said, if it keeps people in their authenticity, then you know, then that there's room for a little bit of that.
And so,
And so, let's see. What were you going to say? Go ahead, please.
No, I was just going to say that I think balance is, like anything else, balance is important, and just making sure that it's not distracting. And that's something that you have to gauge with the individual.
I think, yeah, and probably just practice and figuring out who they are in terms of their voice, what makes the most sense, and with their audiences, too. Sometimes people use certain fillers because they know that those fillers feel good or are comfortable to the people that they're speaking with.
Right.
So in as you look over your long, long, long speaking career since elementary school, I would wonder, what would you do differently if you started all over again? Are there things that you might change in the work that you do, the methods that you use? This is your
Absolutely.
Chance to self-assess.
Well, I would say, again, being candid with you, if I could do it all over again, I would believe in myself sooner. I would believe in my natural abilities much sooner than I did. I tended to lean toward the fact that, you know, I wasn't a communications major in school and all those types of things, and it kind of shied away from my natural abilities. As I said previously, the National Speakers Association helped me embrace those gifts. But if I could do it all over again, I would believe in myself sooner. And I'm definitely a confident individual, but I would say trusting those natural gifts that I have and try to surround myself with people like people in the National Speakers Association, form alliance with those types of thought leaders who could complement those gifts and help me see what I'm capable of doing. Going back to talking about mirrors, you know, I'm a strong believer that the people that you have around you in your life are mirrors, and they, show you the reflection of yourself if they're the right type of people. And I would have loved to have had people around me earlier in my life who saw those gifts and could encourage me to believe in them more. And I think I would have been a little bit further along the path than I am today.
You're young. You have lots of time to continue to perfect your craft, and you're doing such a good job at it. And I really respect all that you've accomplished to this point, and the work that you're doing.
Well, thank you. And the feeling, of course, is mutual.
Sorry, say it again.
I said thank you, and of course, the feeling is mutual.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, Brian Stevens is holding on. He's my co-producer of the show. And I just want to open it to him to see if he has any questions for you. Because he's in the music industry, and he does a lot of speaking. He did the opening announcement for this show. So, Brian, if you have any questions, please feel free.
I absolutely do. How you doing, Mr. Thurton?
I'm doing wonderful. Pleasure to meet you.
Good. Glad to meet you too. Wow, I wish I could reach your heights. What I do is different from what you do. I was in entertainment where I had to be an MC, or I was a band leader and had to fill in dead spots or things like that. But I'd like to transition more into what you do in terms of speaking. But the one thing I realized I had to, what gave me two people, a room of strangers, was I had to know what I was going to say before I went out. I had no structure. That's the thing I never had. And I pretty much, I would wing it, but I'd kind of like feed off of who the audience was and try to appeal to their sensibilities. But listening to you, I think that you're going to have another client pretty soon.
That makes two of us.
Absolutely. Really? I'm serious about that. And wow. I'm looking at some of your methods, and what I tried to do myself, I guess since you're a great speaker, you must be a great writer. And therefore, I know it's important to have your vocabulary strong, use the least amount of words to make your point, and keep it moving, so to speak, so people, like you said, don't get get lost with the message. So where you were, I guess you alluded to being shy in the beginning. What happened to me was a personal life traumatizing event. Was now I'm shy. After that, I guess I got shook up a little bit, and I need to get my confidence back so I can speak confident slowly. You know, I tend to really talk fast now, and Dr. Imani says, Brian, I don't know if you've been down here too long, or and I can't understand a word you're saying. It. And I was a commercial writer, writing commercials for small businesses and voiceovers, but I have to get back to get to your level. I have to get somewhere near your level to have that confidence to go forward. So after this show, I will be seeking information to become one of your clients.
Wow. Well, thank you. That's the highest compliment. What I would say about the whole confidence piece and structure, I think, as I said earlier, those two things go hand in hand. And so I use different models for structure, and I'll just share one of them with you really quickly to give you some sense. So you mentioned that being in a band or in the entertainment space, many times you had to go in front of an audience and fill dead time and things like that. And I admire you for doing that. I don't know if I would have the courage to take that on, but something that is extremely helpful and the things that I advise my clients on is to have a picture in your mind, because the way that our brains work, we think and see things in pictures. And so if I can get you to put a picture in your mind, and if I can get you to hang some words and phrases on that picture, then you're more likely to remember what to say in the proper order. Most people don't have confidence because they're afraid that they're going to lose their train of thought and not be clear when they communicate. Mm-hmm. So quick example being, I use a baseball diamond for a lot of my clients. And I essentially tell them that when you're speaking, whether it be for 2 minutes or if it be for 1 hour, what you want to do is, just like baseball, you start at home plate, you go around the bases, and then you end up at home plate. And so essentially what I do is I put a title or an identifier on each position on the baseball field. So imagine, if you will, home plate is split in half. On the right half of home plate is your introduction. On the left half of home plate is your closing. And so we're going to start off with your introduction. And so whatever your topic is, we would have a few words or phrases that we would draw visually on that baseball diamond. And then going down toward first base, which they call the first base line, is your what I call the provoke line. So after you have this introduction, the first thing that you want to do is provoke your audience to listen to you more. Okay, so you start off with this introduction where you grab their attention, and as you're going down first baseline, you want to provoke them to know more about what you're talking about. And then first base is your first major point, second base is your second major point, and then third base is your third major point. And then as you're coming down that third baseline, coming back home, that's where you make your summary. You basically take first base, second base, third base, you summarize, and then you come back to home plate to your close. So just speaking you through that, you can probably see that if you were given a speech or a presentation and we just had bullet points, you know, beside home plate and on that first baseline, as you're standing up, whether you're filling air or if it's a prepared speech, you know, you're more likely to remember where those phrases are and the order that they're in, just because the baseball diamond gives you that structure in your mind. So as you're talking about it with an audience, you come across as, you know, if you have your thoughts together and everything structured, and they can follow you because you have a pattern. And so I use simple things like that. I also use the hand. And so if you were to look at your hand right now, the palm of your hand is where your controlling idea goes. And then on each finger, I would write one or two bullet points. And so as you're speaking, a lot of times people use their hands when they're speaking. So you can even look at your hand. There's nothing written there. But if you can keep those ideas, those bullet points on your thumb and on your finger, And if it's a longer speech for my clients, I have them use each digit of their finger. So, you know, the finger, of course, is divided into three segments. And so just putting the ideas there, those types of things help you with structure. And when you're confident about what you're going to say, excuse me, because you have that picture in your mind, then all of those things translate. It goes straight to your confidence, and then you can be more clear. And then those two things increase the odds that you're going to connect with the group that you're talking to.
Wow.
Thank you for that clarity.
That is great. That is great. Thank you.
Thank you for that clarity.
The check is in the mail.
Post-dated, though.
Yeah, right.
That's great, though.
This is so good. I mean, it really is giving some dimension to speaking that a lot of people have not, you know, have not heard. And we have people that listen on the computer, people that call in. And a lot of people listen to this show after the fact because I posted tomorrow, tonight on Facebook. So we have a lot of people who are going to be benefiting from the wisdom that you're sharing with us tonight. And we really appreciate that, Dave. So there's,
well,
I'm
trying to step into my power tonight. So thank
you
for allowing me the opportunity.
Oh, you are so there, my brother. You are fine.
You
have
the power.
Thank you so much. You
definitely
have the power. So tell us a little... Yeah. And, you know, time goes so fast. It's 8:51, and an hour goes just so quickly here. And so have just a couple more questions, and there are a couple people that have been holding on the line as well. So I want to open up and see if they have any questions for you. One has to do with patience and the role that patience has played in your professional evolution. Who would you tell
us
about your patience?
Well, I would say that I'm a work in progress, definitely, when it comes to patience. I had a revelation maybe 2 or 3 years ago when it comes to patience. And, you know, I learned the hard way that success or achievement has two parts, one of those parts being work or the effort that you put in, and then the second part being faith. And once I stopped trying to play God and control those serendipitous events that were to occur in my life, you know, at that point, everything just kind of flowed much more freely. And so I focus on the work, you know, doing things like this and sharing with the world just, you know, what God has given me. And the rest of it takes care of itself. And I think I was trying to, you know, step over into the superhuman territory where I had no business, and that was the source of most of my frustration. And so, you know, I now just focus on doing what I can do and just having faith that wherever I'm supposed to be and whatever I'm supposed to be doing, that will be served on my plate. And I will eat it when it's served. And glad to be here tonight with you and Brian.
Right. Thank you. That's so powerful. One of my mantras is, you know, you can't live in faith and fear at the same time. And I guess I'll add to that, you can't live in faith and control.
Exactly.
Control everything. So I will add that to my mantra because living by faith is so very, I mean, and that could be a show in and of itself and could probably last for 4 or 5 hours. But it's nice to know that you've applied that to your life as a speaker and as a speaking coach as well. What would you say to, this is my last question, and then I promise I'm going to open up the lines and see if people who've been holding on so faithfully have any questions of their own. What advice would you give to someone who's just starting in their profession as a speaker? They may be a professional at whatever their craft is, but if they want to move into the speaking arena, what advice would you give to them?
Kind of, I guess, goes in line with having patience. I would say whether it's the speaking profession, the entertainment business, whatever the profession, I would say play the long game. And what I mean by that is just avoid short-term success that will cost you in the long run. And so many people abandon their principles by choosing what appears to be right over what they know in their hearts is right. And so I would say just go with what you know to be right and define success for yourself. You know, there, especially today, there are so many different views and things of, you know, what success is, whether it be the speaking industry, the entertainment industry. And we all have different goals. We're all different people. And I would say play the long game, define clearly for yourself what success means, and just pursue that until your last breath.
That is powerful advice. Thank you so much for that.
Yeah,
play the long game. I like that. I like that. And I have, true to my word, I have opened up the lines. I see a number of people holding on, and I will just, for some reason, the numbers aren't showing up. But if you're on the line and you've pressed one and you'd like to ask our guest, Dan Thornton, a question, this is the time. Feel free.
Hi.
Good evening. Hi.
How are
who
you?
Is this?
My name is Richard.
Hello. Hi, Richard. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I'm here with my brother, you know, was a gentleman much like your guest who really helped him, I think, save his life, really. He suffered from terrible, terrible vertigo. I mean, the fellow couldn't leave the house, and he took medication for it. He saw doctors. He spoke with people, and nothing really helped until he met with a motivational coach. And it's powerful, powerful stuff that these people do, because they got this my brother involved with music, and it changed his whole life. I mean, he can leave his home now. He can get up at karaoke nights and sing. You know, it really, really changed his life. So it's very, very important work. And my brother Bobo, he is here with me right now, and he'd love to say thank you and maybe show you a bit of what he can do.
Well, do you have a question for Dan? I'd like to. We have like 4 minutes left.
Sure.
And that's such a powerful story you shared with us. So why don't you ask us one question where it can be a dialogue with you and Dan?
Bobo, you could pick up the phone and go ahead, and then you can speak with them. Go ahead. Here he is.
It can cost you anything. Hey, hey. Only when I
I'm sorry. Whoa!
Oh,
that
fell. Oh, my God.
Clearly.
I fucking did it again.
Oh, my
clearly.
God.
Holy shit. Are you
okay? We're going to.
That was unusual.
Yeah, you know, that's what happens when you have open lines for your show. I don't know what that was about. But, you know, it served as a 2-minute break for us. So now that we're back to the show, Des, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Good. And we encourage people to call in and to speak.
Absolutely.
But it just wasn't coming across clearly.
Yeah, I'll just say that, you know, that's one of the things when you're speaking that you have no control over is the audience. And so sometimes the heckler, sometimes there are different situations that you have to deal with, and that's just one of those things that happen. So I think that was a great lesson for us today for a point that we didn't bring up, is how to deal with adversity on the platform, something you
how
have
to
do.
How to deal with adversity, yeah. Well, you have the shutdown button, and that's a really easy way to do that. Again, not quite clear what that was about, but for some reason those numbers weren't showing up, the phone numbers. And generally, if the number's not there, I don't open the line. So I'm, again, not quite sure what that was about, but I won't worry about it. Yeah, being able to handle adversity, you know, you think about politicians and people who are in the public eye all the time, and just wonder how they get the backbone to deal with some of the things that but I guess regular speakers have to deal with adversity all the time. What's your worst thing that's happened to you in terms of speaking?
The worst thing that happened to me in terms of speaking happened many years ago, and it was when I went to do a presentation, and I did not know that all of the audience members did not speak English. And so they told me when I got there that I would have a translator. And that was was extremely difficult because nowhere did that come up in the conversation at all. And so it took an extremely long time for me to get through the presentation. And it was one of those things that I don't now take for granted. And so before I speak or work with someone now, I always ask, you know, we are going to be speaking English here, right? And people think, well, what's wrong with you? And that experience has stuck with me for a very long time.
I bet it has. Yeah, you wouldn't even expect to. I would never even think of asking that question. Although I've been to, you know, with my work at the Centers for Disease Control, I've been to conferences where they had many different languages spoken and they had interpreters, you know, and it does take a long time. One of the funniest things is when the speaker tells a joke, and it's like, and so the people in English get it, like, right away and start laughing. And then there's a delay, you know, like 20, 30 seconds later, you hear laughing from people in a different language.
Now,
so it's just,
now
it's
I'll tell you
funny.
really quickly, my experience was dramatically different. It was the opposite side of that coin because I was speaking.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh, Dad, I can't hear you. Lost you for a second. Hello,
can you hear me now?
Yes,
I can. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll wrap up because I know that we only have a few seconds left. But
my point
was when I was speaking, I wasn't saying any jokes. But when the translator translated what I was saying, then everybody started laughing when the translator spoke.
Ooh.
I was like, what are they saying? So, yeah, it was a really interesting experience.
Oh, my goodness, that's kind of scary. It's like, I know what I said, and it wasn't funny.
Right.
What
it
did he say
funny.
To them? Wow. Wow. Yeah. I guess that was one of those experiences that you want to forget about. Like you said. But it taught you the lesson to ask. The language spoken is English at this event, right?
Absolutely.
I have one last question, though.
Mm-hmm.
Would you accept my friendship request on Facebook?
Yes, I will accept your friendship request on Facebook. I have to accept it with a caveat, and I'm going to tell on myself here. I'm not a Facebook person at all, so I'm rarely there, and I should be, and a lot of my colleagues say that I should be. And the reason being is I'm a very spiritual person, and Facebook kind of interferes with my frequency in terms of my peace and things like that. And so I do go up there sporadically, but I'd be happy to accept your request. But that's not the most effective way to communicate with me at all. So I don't want us to start off on a bad foot.
Well, I can admit that
it
can steal your day. It can steal your day.
I find myself deleting people. You know, when people start with vulgar comments and just like really racy kind of things, and you know, I just unfriend. You know, I just don't want to hear that or see that, or you know. So it can kind of steal your peace and joy if you spend too much time on there. I use it in terms of business, in terms of getting the word out about my work and so forth. But even that, you know, there's a lot of other things on there. There's a lot of family stuff. There's a lot of people that, you know, you figure you have to press like because they put a new selfie on there, and that becomes a real big waste of time. But, Brian, I will make sure to connect you to Dez. I have his number. So and Brian actually came with me to one meeting at the NSA. So maybe, Brian, that's something else that you might consider doing is I actually haven't been there for maybe the past 2 months, so I need to get back myself so we can look at that as an option as well.
Yes, but please feel free to share my personal cell phone with Brian. I would be more than happy to connect with you.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks, Dez. And thank you so much for your time. You have just exemplified my feelings about people from the NSA in general, but, you know, also just because you've been so giving and sharing with your information. A lot of people that have the type of expertise that you have will kind of speak and give you the shell, but not what goes inside the shell. You've given a lot of good tips and hints about speaking, and We're truly, truly, truly grateful to you. And if Facebook is not the best place for our listening audience to find you, where is a better way for them to connect?
Yeah, well, actually, you can go on to my website. It's it's DesThornton.com.
DesThornton.com.
Yeah, and that's a good place to connect with me there, and I'd be more than happy to speak to any of your listeners. But I wanted to thank you for the opportunity to be here. I have such deep admiration for your accomplishments and the things that you're continuing to do. And so it's truly an honor for me for you to feel enough about me to invite me to spend time with you and Brian this evening. And hopefully I met expectation. And if any point in the future you would like for me to come back, I would be more than happy to come back again.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, it has been a pleasure, and we're truly grateful to you for spending time with us and, like I said, sharing from your heart and the honesty and the giving is just so special. And it really speaks to who you are as an individual and as a person and as a professional. So thank you so much, Des, and hoping to see you soon at the Georgia chapter of NSA.
And, sure, we're looking forward to seeing you as well.
All right. Okay, well, have a wonderful evening. Have a great evening, and with both Brian and myself, we will both be in touch.
Okay. Take good care. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right. Good night. Bye-bye.
It might seem crazy, what am I saying?